The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thanks, Ken. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Great to see you here, and well done for being here on the first morning of a new term. Let's get started. You may have heard of Jordan B. Peterson. If you haven't, you probably haven't switched on the internet for the last 6 months or so. He's a lecturer, a professor of clinical psychology at Toronto University, and has become really, an internet phenomenon. His book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote for Chaos, I understand it's been the best-selling non-fiction book on the planet this year. It's hard to find out exactly how many copies have been sold, but there's talk in the millions. Very interesting book. Now, he lists these 12 rules. Rule number 8 is of interest this morning, where he says, tell the truth, or at least don't lie. Tell the truth, or at least don't lie. What the book is a series of essays as he tries to give wisdom for life and how to make sense of it. In this essay, he talks about, as he studied psychology as a much younger man, he began to try and understand himself. And it's very honest of him. He says he became uneasy with many parts of his character. Let me read you some of what he says. He says, so I began to pay close attention to what I was doing and saying. The experience was disconcerting, to say the least. I soon divided myself into two parts, one that spoke and one more detached that paid attention and judged. I soon came to realise that almost everything I said was untrue. I had motives for saying these things. I wanted to win arguments and gain status and impress people and get what I wanted. I was using language to bend and twist the world into delivering what I thought was necessary. But I was a fake. Realising this, I started to practice only saying things that the internal voice would not object to. I started to practice telling the truth, or at least not lying. I soon learned that such a skill came in very handy when you don't know what to do. What should you do when you don't know what to do? Tell the truth. That was the story of himself, he says. Taking the easy way out, or telling the truth, those are not merely two different choices, they are different pathways through life. They are utterly different ways of existing. If you betray yourself, if you say untrue things, if you act out a lie, you weaken your character. If you have a weak character, then adversity will mow you down when it appears, as it will inevitably. You will hide, but there will be no place left to hide, and then you'll find yourself doing terrible things. And why not lie? Why not twist or distort things to obtain a small gain or to smooth things over or to keep the peace or to avoid hurt feelings? The reason is simple. Things fall apart. Things fall apart is one of the great discoveries of humanity, and we speed the natural deterioration of great things through blindness, inaction, and deceit. And when lies get big enough, the whole world spoils. But if you look close enough, the biggest of lies is composed of smaller lies, and those are composed of still smaller lies, and the smallest of lies is where the big lie starts. It's well worth a read. I want to put it to you this morning that at the heart of the problems in our world, national, corporate, cultural, tribal, family, personal, at the heart of those problems is lies. Things that are not true, things that deceive. And at the heart of all the problems is one great lie, which I'll talk about in a moment. So let's try and get precise. What's the idea of a lie? Well, I'll just go to dictionary.com. Here's a working definition. A lie, a false statement made with deliberate intent to deceive, an intentional untruth, or something intended or serving to convey a false impression. Have you ever been deliberately lied to? I'm sorry, actually, that's a tautology, isn't it? By definition, a lie is deliberate. There's someone trying to deliberately deceive you. nothing damages relationships like lies. You know, people can do cruel things to you, or they can disobey you, or they can insult you, but a lie damages a relationship like no other. So this morning, I'd like to talk to you about four things, and that is lies in relationship with people, lies in relationship with God, the truth in relationship with God, the truth in relationship with people. Those four points and some Bible passages are on the handout or outline that you've been given. So let's have a look. Lies in relationship with people. What we've been doing over the last couple of months at City Bible Forum Legal is working our way through the Ten Commandments. Very interesting, the shape of them. Historically, the Bible tells us that God brought the nation of Israel out of slavery in Egypt about 1400 BC, using the great prophet Moses, brings them out of Egypt, they become his people, then he brings them to Mount Sinai and effectively tells them how they are to live once they are his people. And the summary of that, literally chiseled in stone, is the Ten Commandments. Now, the breakup of the Ten Commandments, the first three are essentially about the relationship, Israel's relationship with God and how to respond to God, who is their creator and their savior. So the first commandment about worship only the one true God. Second commandment, do not worship the true God using images. They're to know God through his words rather than statues, etc. And the third one, be careful how you carry or use the name of God. What we've done the last couple of months is look through the next seven, four through to ten. Well, we'll get to ten next week. Look through the next seven, which are about how do you have relationships in a healthy society? What's the way to have a healthy society through relationships? And what I find interesting is God doesn't give Israel a bill of rights. What he gives them is a list of obligations in the way they treat other people. So if you look through the fourth commandment about remember the Sabbath rest, you might think, well, where's the obligation there? Interestingly, the Sabbath commandment, take a day off, is given to the head of a household. And it tells the head of the household not only should they rest, but their servants, their sons, their daughters, and even their animals should be given the opportunity to rest for a day a week to celebrate the goodness of God. Then honour your father and mother, do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal. So the value of human life, the value of faithfulness, the property rights of other people. And today we come to do not tell lies against your neighbour. Now, what we've seen is in the flow of the biblical story, the Ten Commandments come very early. They're in the second book of the Bible. And what each of the commandments is, it's like a seed that's planted. They're very brief, and many of them are given in the negative. It's a seed that's planted, and then the rest of the Bible, and particularly the teaching of Jesus, picks that up, and it's kind of almost like a plant that grows and blossoms, and you see what it really develops into. Let me show you, we'll get the idea. So the commandments we've looked at in the last few weeks have been do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal. What do they turn into? Well, do not murder, once you get to the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, becomes love your neighbour, in fact, love your enemy as yourself. Do not commit adultery, don't do the physical act, in the teachings of Jesus becomes faithfulness with body, heart and eyes. And do not steal, that's the negative, becomes ultimately generosity. And so today, do not lie. Well, let's see what that turns into. The ninth commandment is quite simple, really. Here it is in Exodus chapter 20, verse 16. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. Okay? Lying was actually taken very seriously in ancient Israel, and we take it seriously today in terms of relationships, and I don't have to tell this room, particularly in terms of the law. There were rules in ancient Israel about law courts and witnesses. Here's one, Deuteronomy, part of the law of Moses. One witness is not enough to convict anyone accused of any crime or offence they may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. Now, there was a very interesting punishment for perjury in Israel. I think this is very clever, as God's put this together. So you want to commit perjury, you should be very careful. Here's Deuteronomy again. If a malicious witness takes the stand, The judges must make a thorough investigation, and if the witness proves to be a liar giving false testimony against a fellow Israelite, then do to the false witness as that witness intended to do to the other party. You must purge the evil from among you. If you're perjuring yourself about someone in a particular penalty and found to have told lies, you'll get that penalty. I think it just would make people a little more careful about how they spoke in court in those days. But it's not just the idea of lying so much. The commandment really points to do not use your words to damage other people. So Leviticus, another book of the law of Israel, do not go about spreading slander among your people. Don't damage the reputation of other people. Don't damage people with your words. Why? Well, here's a proverb from the Old Testament. A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. It's interesting, isn't it? The proverb says, if you slander or gossip about someone and damage their reputation, it's actually worse than stealing from them. Why? Well, your reputation is worth more than silver or gold. 3,500 years ago, and slander or gossip was a problem. Today, well, we've turned it into an industry, really, haven't we? The trashy magazines, the reality television, I can't imagine getting rid of those magazines. What would you do in a doctor's waiting room? At a personal level, now let me confess, I do this sometimes. I'm ashamed of it, and maybe you do too. You need to remember, if someone will gossip to you, do remember that they'll gossip about you. So the person that puts the boot into other people when they're absent, who do you think they're talking about when you're not around? It's good to remember that. There was an article in last week's Sydney Morning Herald, Do You Need a Gossip Detox? And the journalist Catherine Gray, in a very personal piece, said that she realised that she was judging and condemning people constantly, and she decided that she would stop that. And she noticed a different way in that she related to her friends and how she felt detoxed, I guess, would be the way to put it. Now, what's the opposite of gossip? The opposite of gossip. Stephen Covey, the management guru who unfortunately died 2 or 3 years ago, he says this, the opposite of gossip is loyalty to the absent. Loyalty to the absent. And Stephen Covey, not only good-looking, but wise, here's one of his sayings, says this, to retain those who are present, be loyal to those who are absent. Now, that's worth thinking about. Even if this is all you get this morning, this is worth the price of admission. To retain those who are present, be loyal to those who are absent. What does he mean? The temptation to gossip or slander someone in the great water polo game of life means you push someone else down to lift yourself up. We push the absent down to lift ourselves up. Okay? But the way to actually really win credit, kudos, and win the hearts of those who are present is to demonstrate loyalty to the absent. Why? Because then people will know you're loyal to them when they're not there as well. Well worth thinking about. So, lies, gossip, slander, it's everywhere. Does it really matter? Well, Jesus says it does. As Jesus speaks in Matthew chapter 12, he says this, I tell you that on the day of judgment, people will have to account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. Now, what's Jesus saying there? Is he just making the point that judgment day is going to take a really, really, really long time? Well, it may. I guess it'll be all the time in the world. But no, that's not his point. Because just a bit earlier, why will you be judged by every careless word you say? It's because just 2 verses earlier he said, for the mouth speaks from the overflow of the heart. What we are inside bubbles out our mouth, particularly in our careless words. He's saying that's God will judge us by our hearts, but it's the careless words that we say show our hearts. So, lying, gossip, slander destroys relationships. Now, All of that behavior that we struggle with has its origin in the one great lie, the one great lie that does so much damage to our world and to one another. Let me get to our second point, lies in relationship with God. Jesus speaks about the devil, the evil one, and the great damage that he does fundamentally as the father of lies. Jesus calls him the father of lies in John chapter 8. He's speaking about the great lie. And of course, the great lie you find very early in the Bible in Genesis chapter 3. Let me read you this. These are profound words, this explanation of people and the way that we relate to God and what the problem is. I'll just read it. I think you'll get it quite quickly. Genesis chapter 3, after God's created the man and the woman, put them into the garden, told them they can eat from any tree except one, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There's only one rule, don't do that. One rule that God makes the rules. Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?" The woman said to the serpent, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die." "You will not certainly die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. And then the eyes of both of them were opened and they realized that they were naked, and so they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. There's so much in there, but let me go back. You see, the lie, first of all, the evil one says, "Oh, you won't die." But notice verse 5, he says, "For God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." The great lie is this: God is holding out on you, and God isn't truly good in that he doesn't really want what's best for you, and God isn't truly wise, he doesn't ultimately know what's best for you. He doesn't want what's best for you, and he doesn't know what's best for you. Not good and wise. And if you do your own thing, if you make up your own rules, if you ignore him, if you make your own decisions, you can become like God. And that's the lie that destroys relationship with God. It damages relationship with each other. You see, by the time once they make that step, all of a sudden they realize they're naked, they are vulnerable, they need to be afraid of each other. And as God said, God warned, ultimately we die spiritually because it separates us from God. The lie continues through our world. As you get to the New Testament in the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul says humanity can see that God is there from creation, and yet we suppress that truth and believe a lie, and we end up living for created stuff. We take the good G-double-O-D stuff that God's given us, cross out an O, we make it into almost God stuff and live for that. And ultimately that dishonours our Creator, and it never really delivers for us. That's the great lie. Now, the third point, the truth in relationship with God. If the great lie is the problem, isn't it interesting that as the New Testament claims that God stepped into our world in the person of Jesus, what's Jesus on all about all the time? The truth. Jesus says he's come to witness to the truth. Perhaps the clearest statement of that is when Jesus is on trial before Pontius Pilate, who's the Roman governor of Judea at that time. And Pilate says Jesus is brought on a trumped up charge that he's claiming to be a king in opposition to Caesar. And Pilate puts him on, or he's on trial before Pilate. John 18, "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. Jesus come to witness to the truth. And by the way, that the word testify and witness, the same word, it's actually the same word that we get martyr from. Pilate, of course, he's not interested in the truth. He's a politician with a problem. He just wants this particular problem to go away. As you read John's Gospel, interesting how often Jesus talks about the truth. I checked, it's 27 times Jesus mentions the truth in John's Gospel. In chapter 1, John tells us grace and truth came through Jesus. In chapter 4, Jesus will meet the Samaritan woman at the well and tell her if you want to worship God, you have to worship God in spirit and in truth. Chapter 8, Jesus will say, if you listen to my teaching, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. In fact, on the night before he dies, Jesus goes so far as to say he's the truth, how would you say, personified. So Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's a truth with a hard edge, isn't it? The only way to actually know God is through him. And so how did people react as Jesus wouldn't shut up about being the truth and the truth that he'd come to say about him being God's Messiah, the only way? Some people hated him, reacted in anger. They ultimately killed him. There are others who hear that and believe the truth. So to come into a relationship with God is framed in the idea of believing the truth. For example, James, Jesus' half-brother, as he writes at the end of the New Testament, he chose to give us birth through, how? The word of truth, that we might be the first fruits of all he created. Or Peter, now that you've purified yourself by obeying the truth so that you have sincere love for one another. So it's obeying that truth that Jesus taught that actually brings us back into relationship with God. The lie is the problem, the truth is the answer. All right, last point, the truth in relationship with people. For those of us who would choose to follow Jesus, and I know we don't all follow Jesus, if you're not there yet, it's great that you're here thinking, etc. Once you commit to following Jesus, his followers are to be the people who speak the truth. In fact, the promise, if you'll follow Jesus, is that he'll give you his spirit to live inside you, and God's spirit is called the spirit of truth, again and again, in John's Gospel. So you get the way that Jesus' people are to behave, it's framed in the negative sometimes. So as the Apostle Paul writes to the Christians in Colossae, the town in modern-day Turkey, do not lie to each other since you've taken off the old self with its practices. So don't do the negative, but here's where you move from the negative commandment into the positive. As the Apostle Paul writes to the Christians in Ephesus, he says, instead, speaking what? The truth in love. And you notice how they go together? Instead, speaking the truth in love will grow up into every respect, mature, etc. The truth in love. And so, remember I said that the commandments grow, or they kind of, if you like, blossom into full flower. Do not lie becomes speak the truth in love. And just quickly to have a think about that, to speak the truth in love, well, it's possible to have the truth without love. Maybe you've met people who are like that, just thought, I'll speak the truth, but it's in a harsh, judgmental, well, my word is abrasive. So the truth without love is abrasive. It's like getting your face rubbed with sandpaper, etc. But the alternative, love without the truth, is just syrup. Now you can live on maple syrup for a while, I guess, but ultimately, and you can live on love without the truth for a little while, maybe. But ultimately, you can't live on it. And so the great challenge for those of us who do follow Jesus, the great challenge, and is this, later on in Ephesians, the Apostle Paul says this, the way we speak, not only do not lie to one another, but do not let any unwholesome, and the unwholesome words like rotten or decayed, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Our Aussie way of speaking to one another often involves kind of put-downs of people, and that's fine, and it's humour, etc. But you've got to be very careful. There's a line there that you can cross there. Constantly putting people down, etc., is not good. And what the Apostle Paul challenges us, those of us who follow Jesus, is actually speak in a way that lifts people up, speak the truth in love so that it actually benefits people as they listen. And that is a great challenge for all of us. If Jesus does use truth so often, was there a widespread belief in the first century that Israel had a problem with lies? Was lying a major cultural problem? Did this relate to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, I think the word is corrupting, the Jewish faith in the first century BC AD? Need more context. Yeah, it's a good question. I think when Jesus talks about embracing lies and being deceived, I think he's talking to the whole of humanity. I think it's Jeremiah the prophet that says our hearts are deceitful above all things, that we deceive ourselves. Not only do we lie to others, but we actually lie to ourselves, and then we can rationalise it, etc. There was, I think, for the Sadducees and others, a problem at the heart of it, and that is the Sadducees were essentially the aristocracy of Israel, and they'd embraced Greek philosophy and did not believe in the resurrection. They only took the first five books of Moses. They didn't believe in the resurrection or life beyond death or any of those things. And so in some ways they really are acting out a lie. That's certainly part of the problem. For the Pharisees and others, it's slightly different. They took the Old Testament very seriously, but the great problem of the Pharisees was hypocrisy, because what they wanted was the reputation among men, and I choose that deliberately in the first century because of the way they regarded women, but they wanted to be praised and regarded among men, and yet inside they're corrupt in the way that they act. And so I suppose in a way Jesus being scathing about their hypocrisy is him wanting to tear down the lies of the way that we present ourselves to other people. So yes, there's problems in all of humanity, and particular problems in first century Judaism as Jesus confronts it. And yet every society has problems with lies, as I do, individually. Now that leads us to our society. The second question, does our society really worry about lying now? Donald Trump, known to lie and was elected US president, and supported by the evangelical Christian right. I think people still do worry about lying. Remember I said at the beginning, if you're lied to, it damages a relationship in a way that nothing else does. So a politician or a leader may do something that you don't like, may make a decision that you disagree with. Well, okay, you can suck that up. But when you know that you've been deliberately lied to, that actually undermines the relationship. So I think what we're seeing, and what do I know? But I think what we're seeing is a deep cynicism about government and politics and institutions and banks, etc., because people don't think they're being told the truth. People can cope with the truth if you tell them straight and do things they don't like. What they won't cope with, or what breeds a deep cynicism, is the belief that you're being lied to. That's would be my reaction. Yes, people probably knew that Trump lied, but I think there were other voters who suspected that it was just possible that Hillary Clinton might have told the odd porky as well. So trying to offend everyone equally.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.